I am my reading. Okay. Start seeing people.
Okay. Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Wonderful.
Hey, Milan. It's great to see you here in Clubhouse.
Oh, it's great to have you back. We missed you. This is a very important room today, so I'm glad to see some of our regular tribe coming on in. I see you down there, Ron. Hey, it's welcome. Thanks for being here. We've got some important messages and some obviously important leaders that are going to be here today from the hemp industry in Colorado, because we've definitely got a couple newsworthy headlines. So I'm going to hand it over to you, Josh, and we'll start getting some people into the room. Please ping your friends into the room. We've got important news and updates today regarding upcoming bill for Colorado.
Okay, great. Thanks, Milan. We've got a bill in Colorado that's doing a lot of the same things that recent bills in Washington, Oregon, and California have done, which is purportedly to address the issues of child access to Delta 8. They are basically pulling all hemp-derived products with any THC in them off the market and pushing them through the regulated cannabis system. And that will obviously kill the industry in Chicago, in Colorado. So it's a big problem that we really have to take action. They're voting on the bill tomorrow, and so that's a big problem. So we need there was quite an interesting situation where some states were worried about Delta 8. Some states were not. It tended to be the states that had no regulated marijuana that embraced Delta 8. And because of this, Colorado set up, just like California, Oregon, and Washington did, task forces in order to address these issues of how to make regulations around the hemp industry. So for instance, in California, we have the Industrial Hemp Advisory Board, and that board makes recommendations to the Secretary of Agriculture and the governor. In Colorado, the task force, and we'll be joined here in a few minutes by Hunter Buffington and her team at Ag Policy Solutions, as well as a few others to tell us about what's been going on. They've been deep in the weeds in Colorado fighting the good fight. A lot of these difficulties have come around how to handle regulations of dividing hemp from regulated THC. But let's be honest, this wasn't hard to predict. The legislators and the bureaucrats have experience with only one type of cannabis, and they regulate that in a certain way. And so what we're seeing in states with the most developed cannabis markets is that they are the most hostile to hemp. And I don't know whether it's intentionally hostile or whether it's just a byproduct of bureaucrats, you know, doing what bureaucrats do. This is how they know how to regulate. So why not just push everything through the THC system? And this is what happened in California. We, AB 45, basically made all CBD products illegal unless they were approved at CDPH, California Department of Public Health, individually. And you had to work through this approval process that for 18 months, California took no action. And so the industry was just frozen. You weren't allowed to sell flower in the state, and technically all CBD containing products were illegal. And so AB 45 created a regulatory pathway that basically just made the whole industry illegal and the bureaucracy is moving so slowly, they're not able to get anything approved. And so this is a huge problem. So we need to reach out to, and the goal of this room is to get people to reach out to legislators in Colorado or your friends in Colorado and say that you oppose this bill. And perfect, Hunter Buffington has just showed up. This is great. Hey, Hunter, how are you?
Let me know if that's the correct link, Josh, I posted right there.
I think so, yes.
And Scott, I'm glad to see Strategic is one of our peeps in Colorado. I'm really glad that he's here to hear some of this, and maybe he knows some people that can be activated. But Hunter, please come on up. You might have to hit your mic. This is a little bit different format than we're all used to. Clubhouse has changed a little bit in the last couple months. So please come on up to speak by unmuting your mic or raising your hand.
Damn changing technology. Making us all feel old before we need to.
There we go. I think I got it. Can you hear me now?
Yes. We can hear you now.
So yeah, let's
excellent.
Give a little
context. All right, and I see.
Thanks everyone for joining. Keeping people into the room, this is a really important message. Sorry, go ahead, Hunter.
Oh, no, I just wanted to make sure that Twi and Alan were able to join me as well. And I am so very thankful for being able to have this conversation. It has been very, very challenging over the last couple of months. And I really feel like the industry is being impacted because there's distraction, there's concern over, intoxicating cannabinoids, which is what we were supposed to be focused on with this bill and with the bill in Washington. And I feel that instead of, really protecting the hemp industry that's been regulated, these products are safe, we know what they look like. We've now begun to muddy the waters, and there's some real concern over what does a whole plant full spectrum product look like with the kind of ratios that we've seen here in Colorado and with the non-detectable limits that ended up coming out of the legislation in Washington. And what we, and it's myself and Alan Lewis and Twi Vu, and they'll get a chance to introduce themselves here in a moment. But the three of us really came together working on developing the food regulations, and it includes supplements here in Colorado. So hemp food and supplements are regulated under this shellfish and hemp rulemaking that the three of us participated in. That's really how we galvanized ourselves as a kind of a working group. And so we're not unfamiliar with the regulation that exists now. And then Alan spent hundreds of hours on the task force. I was not on the task force, but both in Colorado and Washington, we had the opportunity for the hemp industry to come forward to present recommendations and to find a consensus and to be involved in the regulation of our industry. And in both of those cases, special interests perverted the recommendations. And because of this distraction with intoxicating cannabinoids and dare I say, D8, what we've ended up with in both of those states is potentially compromising the industry. And in my opinion, could devastate the industries that we do have. And my farmers, my constituents, are not interested in safe harbor. Like, I just want to be clear that, our political statement talked a lot about those products, but my constituents, my farmers, my small processors here in Colorado that I represent are more invested in protecting the products, protecting the varietals, in fact, that
they have cultivated to create these whole plant products. And this also impacts the patient community's access to those types of products too. And so I wanted to make sure that as a professional working as long as I have with the hemp industry and the regulators, that I was on the record to say, this is not the recommendations that we put forth, and this is not the desire of the industry. And unfortunately, when we did put forth those recommendations, and there was broad support, we all arrived at the Colorado Capitol for the first Senate hearing, thinking that we were going to be celebrating this consensus, this unheard of consensus between the marijuana and the hemp industries. And instead, it kicked off these amendments, these backdoor amendments. And now we find ourselves in the position of, you know, trying to prevent the bill from passing, or at least, like I said, for me, the opportunity to say, this is not what we asked for.
Right. Well, Hunter, let's go into that a little bit. I think we're seeing what is starting to look to me like a pretty clear trend in the more mature cannabis states of California, Washington, Oregon, and Colorado. And so each of these states has a stakeholder group, like most industries, to provide advice to the state regulators on how to develop regulations for the hemp industry. And these states have routinely been ignoring these task forces and committees' recommendations and freelancing under the guise of children's safety. And it's hard to be against children, safety of children. You know, who wants to come out against that? And so it's been easy for, I think, the legislators to kind of talk themselves into this approach recommended by the special interests. But they are routinely disregarding their stakeholder groups. Do you believe that that is a directly related to the amount of special interest money that has come in? What do you think is driving this basically execution of the hemp industry in the four Western states?
Yeah, this is a big question. And because I was on, you know, the front row for Washington and again here in Colorado, you know, those are the states that I'm most familiar with. But I do monitor federal legislation, and this is happening in multiple states across the country. And to be honest, this is why I felt like we really needed to make a statement and take a stand. Because this knee-jerk reaction that we're protecting the children and we want to be hard on crime is coming from the regulation of intoxicating cannabinoids. It says it right in the bill. But what we're seeing is that the intoxicating cannabinoid conversation is turning into an opportunity to over-regulate hemp products that are already safe. And so instead of listening to regulation, and here in Colorado, we already regulate these products. That what happens is that the perception of we have to save the children then creates a misguided attempt to regulate these cannabinoids. But what's misguided is they then encapsulate these hemp products that they don't understand. I mean, that's, to me, incredibly clear when they go to a non-detection limit in Washington, which would prevent hemp food that's grasped by the federal government and cosmetics that have an allowance for THC. It now puts them behind lock and key next to D8. And, you know, my colleagues, I really want to invite Alan Lewis to speak to this because, you know, Natural Grocers definitely has an investment and is probably, you know, had the opportunity to watch us in other states. But this issue of is it intoxicating or is it not has not been resolved. And there's a lot more science and research that needs to be developed there. What we're talking about for these hemp products is how to ensure safety. And the first thing that we need to do to ensure safety is make sure that there is, in fact, a regulatory pathway. And we have that in place for hemp. We were trying to develop it for these intoxicating cannabinoids. That's what led to the recommendations. But now what we have is, it's not that. I'm not entirely sure what we have, because no one knows yet. We don't know what the amendments are still happening right now.
And this is working against us in so many ways, because, you know, I think this happens to the hemp industry a lot. I mean, I've certainly seen it in California and in Washington, where we muddy the legislative analysis with lobbying. And so this bill was the result. I'd like to talk a little bit about what it's going to do rather than the details of the legislation, because it's a
hot mess.
We're trying to nail Jell-O to the wall, and that's making it difficult for the hemp industry to organize around it, because there are so many criticisms of the bill, because it's basically turned into a Christmas tree where the legislators and special interests have decorated it with all sorts of crazy stuff. And I don't want to bore people with the details, but but basically the bill as introduced was the result of the compromise and the consensus that had emerged between the Colorado regulators and the hemp industry and the THC industry and all the stakeholders, right? So that was the original bill. And then they amended it to death, and now it's a piece of garbage.
I mean, absolutely. And I would really love to ask Alan to unmute and, you know, share his perspective, especially as someone who did volunteer so many hours and expertise for that task force, and let him share his perspective as well.
No, I would love that. I want to make sure that we need to say the name of the bill, and I want to keep reminding people periodically, because not everybody is going to stay for this whole thing. And so I don't want to miss the call to action. And so the call to action is to say that people oppose the bill because it will destroy the hemp industry. And if they need a list of ways it will do that for their letter, we can help provide that, right? But that's the call to action.
It is. And there's broad support to go back to the bill as introduced without the amendments. Yes, I think that is the consensus. And that's what we would all like to see. That's a happy medium. Well, it's not a happy medium. That's what we asked for. And it's not what we got.
It's what everybody already agreed to. And then the state legislature basically ignored the agreement and went out on their own. Under the influence of special interests.
Hunter, I think I'm in the conversation. You can hear me, right?
Yes, yeah, Alan, we can hear you.
Okay.
Introduce yourself real quick. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about you.
My name is Alan Lewis. I handle government affairs and advocacy for Natural Grocers based out in Colorado. And we're a long-term dietary supplement defender and supporter and retailer. And we've been in the federally compliant dietary supplement CBD full spectrum space since the early days that it was legal to be shipped. When the history of this bill is written, I'm going to put it a little more simply for people, although the analysis so far has been accurate. The result of the stakeholder sessions, the task force sessions, were acceptable, and we all reviewed that. But what happened is the marijuana industry, and I'm just going to be blunt, is making a play to capture as much of the hemp industry as possible. Unfortunately, they allied with the poison control moms. And the poison control moms are petrified of any THC on the marketplace. And they've been denigrating full-spectrum hemp products because of that 0.3%. And the marijuana people, with full knowledge of what they were doing, used that to set up hemp folks, most of the people on this call, as the bad actors, and the marijuana people came in as the white knights, and they were going to rescue the synthetics and semi-synthetics from the terrible hemp folks and take care of them in their dispensaries.
Oh, how convenient.
That set up a tremendous amount of downstream damage. So we are on now Amendment 29. This bill will be voted in out of the House within a few hours, and the governor will sign it into law as soon as he has the opportunity to do so. Let me give you one example of the Amendment 22. Just came off the press. It says, hey, none of this applies to full-spectrum hemp extracts if they have an FDA GRAS approval. So don't worry your pretty little heads.
Oh, Jesus.
So who the hell would write that? Well, the marijuana people would write that knowing that there are no GRAS approvals, not because it's unsafe, but because the FDA has refused to recognize it's present in the food and food ingredient supply chain on principle. This is the kind of stuff that's happening, and I don't mind calling out the marijuana cowboys at all, but their alliance with the poison control moms is going to bite them in the long run when this history is written.
Well, the history of hemp over the last 4 years is one of expediency and a series of bad decision-making that looks to be expedient and in the end bites us in the rear end. And we've seen that in California. This is the classic bootleggers and Baptists alliance, where both sides need the other to survive. And I think the marijuana industry has not thought this through clearly, because lightly regulated hemp, in theory, would provide a much more economically sustainable way of cultivating extractable THC than the regulated market. But they're not looking at ways to work with the hemp industry. They're looking at ways to take over the hemp industry and help balance out the costs of excessive regulation with a whole new portfolio of products that they can suddenly develop an affection for.
Right. And
all
I've
under
only,
the guise of safety.
I've already quoted you on social media while I was listening. Today's the execution of the hemp industry in Colorado and potentially nationally, because the FDA is watching this so closely. And by a strange coincidence, the communications officer at the FDA went to Metro State College in Denver and worked in Colorado most of his career. And I won't share his name or put words in his mouth, but the FDA obviously has a detente, an arrangement with the USDA and the compliant hemp industry that they will allow these safe products to move forward. There's almost no severe adverse events reported on hemp, by the way. 497 in all of 2022 in all states. That's one per state per month. And that's not causation. That's any association. So the FDA is not concerned about safety. But now we've given them ammunition to shut the whole thing down. The entire idea of intoxicating hemp is a marijuana fiction. It is not hemp. It is intoxicating, and we're really struggling morally with the idea in Colorado that we're legalizing street drugs. But the FDA is just going to take this as pure cannon fodder. Here we go. And it'll spread from west to east day by day, week by week. I think the only saving grace is most legislatures are shutting down for the summer. But we have done a lot of permanent damage, and Colorado's reputation is in the tank.
I mean, it's such a continued frustration that the FDA refuses to act on this, and the bad faith of the lobbyists putting in, you know, as soon as you have a GRAS application, makes it look to legislators who think they're getting honest information. They're like, well, that makes sense. It's all under the guise of consumer safety. And I think that, you know, we as an industry, the hemp industry needs to make its peace with Delta 8 and the synthetics, because if we continue bickering about that, when we don't have clear direction from, or we have anything but clear direction, you've got the Ninth Circuit saying it's legal, you've got the DEA saying it's an analog, and some other courts in the middle. And so the Delta 8 piece of this seems to me to be what is driving most of this hand-wringing and pearl-clutching by the prohibition
So let me jump in. Sure, we can make peace with it as long as D8 appearing in a full spectrum, notice the contradiction, full spectrum extract, spiked with D8, is still under 0.3% and doesn't generate any adverse offense. We can make peace with it. But in the long run, the FDA will never recognize a synthetic intoxicating cannabinoid as a food or dietary supplement ingredient. So by making peace with it, it is a poison pill. We need to separate ourselves from that. And I'm not making a judgment. If people want to do both, that's fine. Just don't do them together. We have to keep full spectrum farm bill compliant hemp extracts in the dietary supplement category, slowly move them into the food ingredient category, and make damn sure that we're not associated with street drugs. So this is what I really resent about the marijuana lobby, especially in Colorado, because they're in Governor Polis's pocket and he's in theirs. The issue is that they're denigrating hemp, making it look dangerous, making it look like a synthetic poison for their own benefit. I can't, I'm never going to make peace with that. I'm done with it.
I am with you on that. And I have been a skeptic of Delta 8 from the beginning. I think that more research needs to be done. But and many of us, I think, knew from the beginning that Delta 8 would provide our opponents with a club with which to beat us. Going C, and you know, there are real issues with Delta 8 products being available to young kids. I shared with Hunter yesterday that I was working on doing some outreach to some state legislatures and ended up talking with a state senator from West Virginia who oddly answered his office phone, and his wife was a fourth grade teacher. And she told him that she had four or five kids that regularly slept through class because they were eating Delta 8 gummies and smoking Delta 8 vapes. To me, that is a different issue, though. And what we saw in Washington and what we're seeing in Colorado is, though that is the rationale for this, quote, legislative action, the legislative language that they've written will not actually address the problem that they claimed to be addressing.
Right. To be clear,
absolutely.
To be clear, the poison center moms are right. DA, the way it's made, the way it's contaminated with solvents, the way it's combined with other drugs like fentanyl or ecstasy or whatever, the way it's inhaled or vaped or whatever is extremely dangerous, right? I support them. They cannot separate that from full spectrum hemp. And the marijuana industry encouraged that confusion, right?
Yeah.
So to be clear, this stuff is not good. And the poison control moms have a very important place. But they crossed a whole bunch of lines with other people's encouragement and forgot that there were another equal or larger number of moms that are the CBD full spectrum moms whose kids depend on it to function.
Right.
Yes.
And the marijuana industry didn't make that distinction either.
Well, no. and that's another thing. I have a good friend who... Yes, let's talk about it. Because I have a lot of friends who use CBD and cannabis products for their autistic children. And these are moms that have worked very hard to formulate products that provide some relief and quality of life for their neurodivergent kids. And this is going to have a pretty dramatic impact on access to products for health and wellness, will it not?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll jump in and start with that, Alan. And then I definitely want to make sure that we get a chance to introduce Twi too. But the reason I wanted to jump in on this, and it's exciting to perhaps have this conversation and expand on it in the future, but not only are we then limiting the products that the patients can access, we also then start to prevent farmers who have been genetically modifying and working towards varietals that present a very specific cannabinoid profile. And oftentimes, you know, that matches the outcomes that we're looking for in our therapy. And it was said to me by a proponent of the current draft that there's recognition that we are going to prevent a segment of farmers and small manufacturers from being able to have their current products that have already been safe and on the market be compliant, and that they recognize that the solution would be to add CBD distillate to their products to make them compliant at the 20-to-1 age gate. This is the antithesis of what we want to see in our whole plant, full spectrum products that are deemed safe. It then imposes that instead of a natural product, we then have to adulterate, in my opinion, these natural products with these distillate and isolates in order to make them compliant. This, again, is the antithesis. And I think this is a great opportunity to introduce Twi and her expertise. And Twi, can you talk a little bit about the manufacturing process? What's the difference between, you know, a whole plant spectrum product and a product that's manufactured?
Good afternoon, everybody. Can you hear me? It's my first time on Clubhouse.
We can.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Welcome, Twi.
Thank you.
Hi.
Will you introduce yourself? Give us a little brief introduction.
So my name is Twi Vu, and I started off as a regulator back in 2010 when marijuana was first legalized in Colorado. So I was the first inspector to inspect marijuana operations and actually roll out, not regulation, but adopt any sort of food regulations and apply them to the marijuana industry in Denver. Denver was the only city and county in Colorado that was regulating the cannabis industry, and I was head of that. And I've been doing that since 2010. I worked in the Denver Department of Public Health and Environment for the next 5 years, helping develop not only how to inspect these types of operations, but also training other states on how to inspect operations that were cannabis operations, because at that point in time, nobody knew anything. I didn't know anything. I spent a lot of time sitting with operators, having them explain to me the processes and the solvents and the different types of products, and really understanding the culture and the language, because the language is completely different than, you know, anything that I had understood, because I wasn't a part of that world. So from there, I left the health department, and then I worked for both the marijuana company and then later on a hemp company, you know, overseeing manufacturing of infused products. So I have the perspective of not being only a regulator. I also worked in the marijuana, you know, launching products. I helped launch Snoop Dogg's product back in 2014, and then working in the hemp industry and also seeing, you know, hey, what is it that we're doing here? It's very similar to the marijuana industry. Obviously, you know, the same plant, just different THC profile that would be considered legal. And then from that point on, currently I'm working as a consultant, working for all industries, marijuana, hemp, as well as regulatory. So, you know, my first love is always public health and protecting consumers and trying to help elevate you know, the industry, both marijuana and hemp, to comply with not only the current regulations as it stands, But also in the states where they don't have regulations and they don't have a lot of guidance from the regulatory authority, whether it be local or state, on how to do it safely. Because there are a lot of great companies out there that want to do the right thing and they just don't know where to start. So, you know, I step in and I help them and I tell them this is what you should do. Doesn't matter if the regulations are there, you apply it to yourself and in your process. So that's kind of what my background is. Now, with respect to what Hunter was talking about for formulations, you know, the concern really is, and Hunter has already touched upon this, is, you know, really allowing for farmers to grow the cultivars that they want to grow, because not everybody grows the same thing. If everybody grew the same thing and sold the same thing, then there's, you know, no variety for the patients, no variety for the consumers. And how many times have you heard from patients where, you know, I took this CBD product and it didn't work, but then I tried this other brand and for some reason that works, but consumers don't fully understand when they look at full spectrum, they don't know that there's a different cannabinoid and different terpene-terpenoid profile that went into making that product, unless they look at the C of A or the certificate of analysis for those of you who aren't in the space. So unless they're looking at it and comparing it and understanding that, okay, you know what, there might be more beta-caryophyllene in this, you know, extract, whereas there's more, you know, for the different terpenes. But what I'm saying is different cannabinoid profile, different terpene profiles with the different full spectrums. And then on top of that, you know, is it an actual whole plant extract or is it, or are they only extracting certain parts of the plant? So you're going to have a different type of formulation you know, in that extract, which then you add into the tincture or the gummies or whatever it is. Now that's very different, obviously, from a broad spectrum. And for those who don't understand what broad spectrum is, it's basically a full spectrum that has been processed further to remove the THC. But understand, while you are removing that THC molecule, there are other ones that have a very similar boiling point. And so you're going to be removing those minor cannabinoids from that full spectrum as well. So a broad spectrum may resemble a CBD isolate very similarly. It might have some minors in there, but for the most part, a lot of the minors are stripped out. And then of course you process it further and you can have a CBD isolate. So I'm not touching base on, you know, I'm not trying to get too technical and say, okay, well, this is how you do distillate. But what I'm saying is a broad spectrum versus a full spectrum versus a CBD isolate, all great products, doesn't work for everybody. Everybody has to kind of decide, you know, what works for them and when they take it, whether or not they feel the effects. And even within the full spectrum range, there's so many different types of extracts out there from so many different cultivars that, you know, we just want to ensure that we're able to protect those types of products. And as long as they're formulating it and making it so that it's less than 0.3% THC, they should be allowed to be in the market and not be restricted by the, you know, 1.75 milligrams of THC per serving, and not be restricted by the 15-to-1 ratio or the 20-to-1 ratio. So that's what's in the current bill. And that could really, you know, affect a lot of manufacturers, not only by the formulation or just saying, you know what, we're not doing that product anymore, or, you know, you have a full spectrum, but you can't formulate it the way you would normally have to formulate. And you would have to add either the broad spectrum or even a CBD isolate to ensure that you make that 15-to-1 ratio or that 20-to-1 ratio to be compliant.
So Twi, are you basically saying that this bill will, in a nutshell, to kind of put a line under what you just said, those of us who know the cannabis plant know that it's an essential oils and cannabinoid factory, and it produces a really amazing array of metabolites that are useful to humans. And so people who have focused in on finding the right varieties, or cultivars for their specific medical conditions, will very likely lose access to those products because the 100%. Pathway to their, okay. So I think that's a really important point, is that in the process of trying to create some safety, we are going to deny the wellness benefits of the plant to a whole bunch of people in the interest of safety.
Yes.
And yet the bill as written will not actually address the safety issue thoroughly, and yet will thoroughly destroy the hemp industry.
I mean, you know, as Hunter has already pointed out, Colorado has we do a great job of regulating the hemp industry, and the hemp industry is, you know, extremely compliant. You know, of course, there's always bad actors wherever you go. And this is probably the reason why, you know, this bill was born, because there are bad actors that were taking advantage of the 0.3% THC, right? So if you look at that and you look at the serving size and you increase your serving size, then heck, you can throw in a ton of THC into that product and then promote it however it is that you're promoting it. And so that is how it gave rise to this bill. I think that was the fuel that started the fire. But yes, we're going to lose access to a lot of different products out there. And I think, you know, Bonnie Jo can even speak to that, that it's going to impact her products. And, you know, obviously we don't have, you know, everybody, every single farmer on this call that can say, yes, it's going to impact us. But for the operations that I have either worked with or operations that I oversaw, 100% it would impact, because we always formulate it up to the compliant point. Obviously, you know, operating limit always less than the 0.3%, but did we take it up to that edge? We 100% did, because we knew the medicinal and beneficial value of having, you know, the higher THC, and we would always bring it up to the legal limit. We did still manufacture broad spectrum products and isolate products, but that's the great thing about, you know, this legal market. You can have a variety of products and determine which ones will work the best for you. Or your
right.
child.
Let the consumer choose, rather than having regulators deciding on formulations so that they meet some predetermined cutout for how they want to regulate this product. Bonnie Jo, I know you're under the weather, but if you could spend a minute or two to take us back to the future. We saw a similar bill in Washington, and similar bills in Oregon, and similar situations in which the state legislatures and the administrations in the states completely ignored the stakeholder group that was on the committee or the task force to recommend regulation. They completely ignored that, and so I think we're seeing that manifest itself in Colorado right now. Can you tell us what happened in Washington and the impacts of that? You're muted. Oh, there you go.
Okay. hi, everybody. I'm Bonnie Jo Peterson. I'm the executive director of the Industrial Hemp Association of Washington, as well as the board chair of the Association of Western Hemp Professionals. So I don't have a product of my own, but I represent and work with many different companies that have many different products. And so, and thanks for having me back, Milan and Josh. So Washington was definitely a brutal, brutal session around the bill SB 5367, which did have a companion bill in the beginning. We were able to stop the companion bill in the House, but the Senate bill continued to move, was amended many times, similar to Colorado, with complete and utter, you know, disregard and ignoring what a legislatively mandated task force worked very, very hard on, just like in Colorado, with multiple stakeholders, scientists, regulators from our Department of Ag, as well as Health Department. We had many, many, many peer-reviewed studies that we relied on for our recommendations. Also had a literature review of these peer-reviewed studies that we were, referring to, which was also completely ignored. It was a big piece of the high THC cannabis, adult use cannabis. There's no longer the word marijuana in statute in Washington state. That has been removed and changed to cannabis, which also makes things confusing because nobody knows which type of cannabis is being talked about in statute sometimes. But there was this utter disregard for multiple reasons, I believe. We had a very large pushback from the adult use end of things from specific lobbyists, which threw things into the whole fear-mongering public safety, as well as a perception of competition, which isn't reality. We're trying not to get people high with hemp products and spend a lot of time, just like a lot of the conscientious players, making sure that safe practices and products are compliant. So with a big piece to the fear mongering, that any amount of THC is going to get somebody high, and that kids have access to these products and are getting high. But what they completely missed the mark on is the conscientious players trying to have a wellness products that work for people. A big piece, though, that kept coming up over and over again, and it's happened for the last 3 years in Washington state, is the 0.3 piece to the puzzle with the adult use high THC cannabis folks coming out and saying these products can have up to 150 milligrams on a regular basis of THC, and that other products that they've found had over 1,000 milligrams of THC and were still compliant at 0.3. So trying to argue against that was insurmountable.
Well, and that's, Bonnie Jo, this is a thing that we have struggled with for quite a while in the industry, is how we address the people that, I don't know that I would go as far as Twee calling them bad actors because they produce a hemp-derived THC product that may have a dose that's high enough to get you high. I am not opposed to that in principle. And I think that a lot of the regulated marijuana industry was built on the basis of reefer madness mindset in our legislators. And so I don't even think the regulated marijuana system works very well anymore. And so by applying this strict perspective on intoxicating cannabinoids, by us avoiding that, we have planted a bomb in our industry that has now blown our leg off effectively, and we're dragging forward wounded, because we can't say there aren't hemp products that get you high, because there are a ton of them, and a lot of them are produced, the worst ones, marketed to young people and produced outside of the regulated market. In somebody's kitchen. I mean, those kind of products are dangerous for more reasons than the THC. But how do we address this issue without continuing to dig ourselves further in a hole and make room for people in the industry that produce intoxicating products or potentially intoxicating products under hemp? Does that all need to go into the regulated THC market? If it's potentially intoxicating or impairing, it should be within the regulated market.
If it gets you high, it should be in the regulated market. We've spent many, many years telling legislators, industry, other industries, I should say, just general public trying to inform them that hemp does not get you high. But now here it does get you high, whether it's, you know, at very high amounts or, you know, Delta 8s involved with, you know, I just looked at a product that had 800 milligrams of Delta 8 in it. So, you know, we've been ignored in many cases because we've been telling legislators that this does not get you high when there's, you know, proof that people are able to get high off certain products.
Right. So in this instance, and I think, again, this is one of my criticisms of how the hemp industry generally has operated, we've tended to take these opportunities to do detailed criticism of regulations that bores everybody into not taking action in the end. So our goal in this process here today is to encourage people to let the legislature in Colorado know that this bill will destroy the hemp industry. Hunter, do you want to chime in again and just give us a refresher, the bill name and the approach that people should take when writing to the assembly members?
Absolutely. And Alan, if you could share the link to your amazing widget in the chat, I think that would be incredibly helpful. So this bill is SB 23-271. And its title is Intoxicating Hemp and Cannabinoids. So that's the first place where we can really take issue, is that in intoxicating cannabinoids should be regulated, but that's not what has been the outcome of this bill, right? I think the most important thing that we need to let our legislators know is that the hemp industry and the marijuana industry came together. We created regulations. We went to the Capitol in broad support of this bill. And then the influence of this backdoor negotiation, and Alan mentioned this, there are now 29 amendments. And Twee is really wanted to talk about all the inconsistencies. We just don't have time. But when you have a bill that's over 30 some pages and then it gets amended 29 times, there's no opportunity for any kind of feedback from the industry or from the experts, like those you're hearing from today, to weigh in. The other thing I would share is that the legislators themselves have spoken to the fact that none of them understand this bill, even as they're making statements that this is to protect the children. And the complexity of this issue is why we created a task force. So I would love to see an opportunity for folks to have their voices heard, protect our whole plant, full spectrum products that are already regulated. There's years of safety data. Do not put an age gate on these products. Do not do that. That is opening the door and implication for hemp to, in fact, be age gated as an intoxicant. Like, can we please not do that? And the other thing is, my constituents don't have the ones that I'm hearing from. So let me be clear. Most of my clients are and constituents are grain and fiber processors, but I've been working in the hemp industry since the beginning here in Colorado. And we all started with flower, right? Like, that's a part of the reason we got to where we are today. And so my farmers have spent years developing these varieties, years making sure that their products are whole plant, full spectrum, and those products are on the chopping block. And that means the impact for farmers, for the hemp industry, for patients, for consumers, the implications are profound. And the reason that this is happening is because of intoxicating cannabinoids. Let's be clear, intoxicating cannabinoids should not be regulated as hemp products. And Bonnie Jo made that mention as well. So that's really my ask, is let's get involved. Let's make sure that they hear from the hemp industry that, you know, what our priorities are and what it is that we need them to do.
And Hunter, can I just add to that?
Yeah,
as well?
Please go ahead, Twee.
I want everyone to understand that Colorado has been the leader in cannabis and hemp legislation and regulation, and everybody's been watching us, and they are currently watching us. If we pass this bill with the age gate, if we pass this bill with the 1.75 milligram THC per serving, we are setting a precedent for the entire country. And so don't think it's going to stop in Colorado. It'll probably start knocking on your door as well. And so this is one of the reasons why we are trying to stop it. Besides the fact that I'm 100% safe harbor, you know, just the fact that we're going to really, you know, kill this industry, kill the full spectrum, whole plant extract farmers that, you know, are cultivating these amazing, amazing cultivars. We don't want to kill that. So I just want everyone to understand that we are setting a precedent if this bill moves forward.
Well, and I think we've seen that. I mean, we predicted that 2 years ago when AB 45 passed in California, or 18 months ago, that it would, you know, my thought was a lot of bad policy ideas start in California. And my concern was this horrible AB 45 under the guise of regulating hemp and making it safer killed the industry. I mean, I had farmers who had crops in the field and they passed this bill in August. And so we had probably a quarter of our customers in California who simply chose not to harvest because they had no out-of-state business for their flower, and now it couldn't be sold. So I think, Tui, you're exactly right. Bad ideas spread quickly, especially when there's money behind them. And the regulated THC industry, I believe, sees this as an opportunity to seize a new market share and bring in products that are easier to defend as wellness products. And so CBD products have the opportunity, they present the opportunity to legitimize dispensaries as wellness centers, where that has been a bit of a stretch. I mean, I got my first marijuana recommendation years ago in California after marijuana was legalized for writer's block. I just wanted to see if that would be a qualifying condition, and it was. And so I see this jump into consumer safety, especially post-pandemic. And you have to understand, I'm sure, that these legislators are hearing from people. The media is getting everybody worked up. And so this for the children logic is a way of bullying people out of debating the actual merits of the issue. And so I think we really need to be smart about reaching out. Please do not go on Stemwinders if you get a legislator or a staffer on the phone. Remember that the point is to persuade, not lecture. And so telling these people of the disasters that will come, and being a prophet of doom for the hemp industry is really helpful right now, because we believe these legislators are being told that the hemp industry broadly supports this approach. And that's just factually untrue. We broadly supported the approach of the original bill. And now it's been amended to be a toxic vehicle delivering poison to the industry. So how, Alan, how is your team working on this on the dietary supplement side? Is that more of the focus you've taken on the medicinal wellness and health products that you currently produce and sell, and the availability and access?
I mean, our whole interaction with the hemp industry is full spectrum extract products. And they're typically managed by longstanding dietary supplement companies that we do business with for generations, and fully compliant cGMPs, process controls, certificates of analysis. And then we go ahead and test them periodically at their and send them the bill to make sure that they're compliant, which they have so far always been compliant. But my team is me, and the company absolutely agreed from a moral perspective that the legislature endorsing synthetic intoxicants was not defensible. And we have the luxury of a 70-year history of putting Dache in place, defending Dache, and seeing it incrementally chipped away at so that the access to dietary supplements becomes harder and harder. This is a death knell, not just to broad-spectrum hemp-compliant hemp products. It's a big shot against dietary supplements. And the things that were said by the poison control ladies with the endorsement of the marijuana cowboys against dietary supplements were shocking, were absolutely shocking. And this is going to have repercussions politically for a long, long time. We don't know yet how to fix the damage that was done in the Colorado legislature by the cowboys and by the poison control ladies denigrating full spectrum hemp products. I think I got close to answering your question, but feel free to zero in on something.
No, that's great. I appreciate that. I have worked closely with APA for a number of years. APA is the American Herbal Products Association, and I have long been an advocate of hemp being classified as a dietary supplement, because in the end, the final fight will be over all the cannabinoid molecules will be between dietary supplements and the pharmaceutical industry. And in my opinion, the dietary supplements industry is a much better partner for the hemp industry than
right. And we
pharma.
That's why we have to stick to full spectrum or broad spectrum,
yes.
But botanical extracts, it's the only place that we have a chance of hanging our hat at the FDA.
Let's talk a little bit about the logic of dietary supplements. The Dache Act was passed, I believe, in 1994.
Correct.
And that act basically stated that any ingredient that was a food or dietary supplement before 1994 would be categorized as a dietary supplement and out of the reach of FDA regulation.
Correct, more or less. We can leave it at that. Getting into the nuances but that's essentially correct. And the problem is that in the pre-internet age, we know that there were hemp extracts in use in traditional medicine, even in conventional medicine. Proving that to the FDA has been largely impossible. So I want to jump a couple of steps ahead, because as Twee has pointed out and Hunter knows, once you synthesize, once you take that extract with the CBD in it and you synthesize it into anything else, it is no longer enjoying the protections of Dache, and it will become an investigational new drug. And unfortunately, the joke's going to be on marijuana when they get endless regulatory interventions saying, why are you selling this when it has no federal protection? It's not THC from marijuana, and it's not it's not derived from a hemp extract. So they go back to the USDA and say, oh, well, there's D8 in hemp, so we're going to say D8 is legal. No. Federal drug law preempts that bullshit argument. And once they start trying to synthesize this and sell it on the market, the FDA is just chomping on the bit to shut them down for creating an illegal drug. That right. I guarantee you, before the end of the year, this whole thing blows up in their face. And frankly, I can't wait.
Well, I wish that I shared your faith that the FDA was going to take action. But they haven't exactly covered themselves in glory.
But
if they thought that the DEA had jurisdiction over Delta 8, they're sure not acting like it.
They will take action on behalf of the pharmaceutical companies.
Of course, yes, that makes total sense to me.
That's the chapter that's about to happen here.
Yeah. And that's why I really recommend you all check out APA's website, AHPA.org, American Herbal Products Association. It is a wealth of resources. And the team there is fantastic. And I have learned so much about dietary supplements regulation. And so I think that, you know, our hope is that as the hemp industry begins to unite, and we've had some good progress on moving the various associations and working groups, communicating and agreeing on some things. And though the road has not been without potholes and bumps, I think we're really making some progress. And so I think that the goal for this last session, and I think Hunter mentioned yesterday that the legislative session in Colorado ends Monday.
Correct. But they're working all weekend. So essentially Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday by midnight, they have to end.
And do they have to end do they have like a budget situation that's pressing them? Can they extend, or is it likely that they will end the session?
Briefly, it's in the Constitution. There's 115 days or something, 118.
Okay.
And they have to adjourn, or the governor has to call a special session. And they don't like it. It happens very, very rarely. But what happens is in the next 4 days, they will bend every rule imaginable. And the opposition, which because governor, Senate, and House are all controlled by Democrats, the opposition being the Republicans, will do every trick in the book to delay action on every single item. And that's why it's taking 2 to 3 hours just to pass a bill out of the House that otherwise has already been reviewed by both chambers and 3 committees, because the Republicans are saying, oh, you're going to play this game and pass everything that you want. We're going to slow you down as much as possible as that deadline looms.
So the key will be to make noise on this. Social yes. media, direct calls and emails to legislators. Are these what we feel would be the most effective actions that people could take today and tomorrow?
Hunter, do you want to give them the bad news?
Yeah, and this is a great place for us to close this. And I think Tweet may have left. She definitely had a hard stop. But again, you know, the three of us felt like this was moving fast, that there was broad support from the special interests. And we really felt like we didn't have an opportunity to impact the trajectory of the bill. And so the political statement that we issued yesterday, hopefully many of you have seen it, but it definitely caused a ruckus. And that was our intention to ensure that when this passes, because it still looks very likely that it will, but we did create some mayhem. And there are some considerations by the legislators. They're recognizing that this is problematic. And that was our goal, was to say, we want you to know that we're taking a stand. We're going to be very public, and we're going to voice our opinions. And we wanted to create an outlet for the consumers, the patients, the hemp industry to let the legislators know that this is not representative of us. I wanted to make sure that we took a stand, we said what we were unhappy about, and that we created opportunity for there to be a pushback, not just now, but in the future, because the implications of this are profound. And we couldn't stop what happened in Washington. I suspect that this is going to be happening in more states as it comes down the line. And Tween and Alan have both said, FDA is watching this. Everybody's watching this. And so the most important thing for me, and I think speaking on behalf of the all three of us, was that our voices were heard. We had the opportunity to stand up and say, no, this is not representative of what we want. This is not representative of the hemp industry. And to know that we were on record pushing back. So I would invite all of us to go on record, have your voices heard, push back, like, let it be known that this is happening and we're not okay with it. But what we're hearing is that this bill is going to pass. And that, you know, Bonnie Jo and Josh and I were working in Washington, and it's very much the same thing where, you know, we're trying to come at them with some logic and some recommendations. And what we're hearing is protect the children, and it's misplaced. And this bill certainly doesn't do that. So let's let our voices be heard, take a stand, make sure they know that we're unhappy and that we're watching.
Hunter, I just posted the link to the House calendar, and it has linked to the live audio, and this bill is up next. So if you want to see democracy fall apart, this will be a lesson to everybody about 10 floor bills being introduced, random debate. This will go on for a couple of hours, but I strongly encourage you be there for this execution and understand what's happening firsthand.
So they will be, will they be debating this bill, or will it be waved through? Or we don't know until it comes up.
They have to introduce 10 new amendments.
Oh, okay. So they're going to have to go through the reading of the amendments.
At second reading, 2 days before the session closes. This is so inappropriate.
But this does mean it has to go back to the Senate because the House is changing the bill.
Right. And so that buys us some time. I mean, we actually defeated the precursor of AB 45 the year before AB 45 passed in California. It failed, and it in part failed because of COVID. And we basically stirred up enough heat that the legislators felt like they couldn't vote on it. They couldn't, and so they killed the bill until the next session. And so is there a chance that if they hear enough, if they hear from enough people, the bill could go away for this, the rest of the session?
And I've heard that we've caused some concern and some heartburn for not only the special interests, but for the legislators themselves. So I would say that it's in the words of famous Bonnie Jo, it's not over until it's over. And I would also say that the kind of pressure that we can put on the legislators right now is a very good message to the governor as well.
Well, then I want to continue to encourage people to call and email, even if we, you know, don't think it's going to help. I'm one of those people who believes that maybe today's defeat is the last defeat and tomorrow will bring victory, which is the reason we have to continue to fight.
And this is a national issue now, so everyone should feel like a stakeholder in the Colorado debate. In the chat, I put our corporate address. So if you're using the widget, which will allow you to contact a sponsor, and there's some predetermined text there that you can edit, that will go to the bill sponsor, Chris Kennedy, who is our representative. And the more people and different emails that he hears from across the country might give him the courage to change direction.
Well, I think the more I really support that, and the more we can be clear about this. Again, don't get lost in the tall grass, because if we have 100 people write in with 50 different issues, it's not going to look like there's consensus. So stick to the hemp as medicine that's going away. Stick to access and patients' rights. Any other thoughts?
Well, I'm going to disagree with you, because you only get to say one thing. And I mean, things have changed while we've been on the phone, right? And it's about to change again as we get to the floor debate. But if we just say, how dare you legalize street drugs, we might shift a dozen legislators to say, this is one step too far. If this doesn't pass, Colorado's back to synthetics being illegal and dietary supplements being regulated under federal guidelines. So we're good. Everyone on this call is really good if this doesn't pass. We gain nothing by it passing, and we lose quite a bit. So, Hunter, I'd like your opinion, but knowing what you know at this second in time, how dare you legalize street drugs? Probably the one most important thing to say.
Yeah, and I would say that the moral inequity of banning these products in Colorado is a great way to talk about the children. Like, are we protecting children when we ban this product in Colorado, but we make allowances for it to leave the state? If the senators and legislators want to make this about that, then that's probably the most powerful message that we have. And holding them accountable means a lot, especially as we come towards an election year.
Yeah, I agree.
Are the Colorado legislators up in odd numbered years or even numbered years?
Every 2 years.
But with the standard election. So nobody's up for re-election this November.
I think that's correct. It's 2024, even years, yeah. Right, Hunter?
Yeah, that's what I think. So I think so too.
Okay. I mean, I think, folks, that there's a lot of room here to offer criticism of the bill, but pushing these two lines that Hunter and Alan are suggesting, I think, are both quite good. And we need to not, I know this can be difficult. You know, my frustration over Delta 8 knows no bounds. He who fights and runs away lives to fight another day. We've got to work to kill this bill, and then we can address some of the other issues later. But first things first, we can't fix everything at once. And so I'm hopeful that the people listening can share the whole process. The bill number, somebody, Pamela, is asking, restate the bill number.
Yeah, SB23-271.
Here, I'll share the link again for Alan's widget.
Beautiful.
So this is Bonnie Joe again, and I have a question. So I'm seeing on the bill page that it passed appropriations this morning with one amendment. So where are the other amendments if they've not been posted?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you think democracy was transparent and inclusive? I'm telling you, of course. The 10 new amendments came out 30 minutes ago. And I demanded to see them. It's the only way that I have them. Twee and Hunter, I forwarded them to you. So they will never be listed online. Most people will hear them when they're first read in the House on the floor. All legislators may have copies now in an inbox, but that inbox has 200 legislative emails in it. This is how we're playing this game. So the marijuana lobby has a lot to answer for.
Yeah. Oh, God. Depressing. Is there a website that has been set up to fight this bill? Is there a link to your talking points anywhere? Hunter, how about on your website?
Not on the website, but our political statement has some talking points and would be a great place for folks to get some more information and look at those talking points. It has a link to the representative's emails as well. Alan, do you happen to have that handy? I'm not. I just walked away from my computer, of course.
Yeah, I'll find it. Remind me of the website name.
It wasn't the website. It was the Let's Talk Hemp statement. Here, I'll find it. If you guys want to keep talking, just give me a second.
Do we want to just give them the link?
Yeah, that's what I was actually looking for.
Yeah, the link to the Let's Talk Hemp website. I mean, also people, you know, can Google the Let's Talk Hemp website.
Bear with me a second.
No, you're fine. I think, guys, I really appreciate all of you being here for the Hemp Rising revival. I was in Italy for 2 months, and so we took a break from doing it. And in the midst of that, Clubhouse made a bunch of changes. I am excited to get back to talking hemp and policy regularly with you all. So please do follow our room, or no, what is it called? It's called a house now, Milan.
Yeah, and we don't have a waiting list, I don't think, so anyone can join.
We're not particular about who we let into our room. We like people that are enthusiastic about him. That's the only requirement, right?
There you go.
Yes.
That's how I snuck in.
Thank you so much for having us as well.
The link is in the
chat. Okay, yes. That's perfect.
Did you get it? I'm still looking.
I posted it. It's just taking a while.
Yeah, okay. Clubhouse is a little slow today. There, I think it just came
through. There it goes.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you so much. It's definitely a team effort and teamwork. And I can't thank my farmers, my constituents, my colleagues, Alan, Twee, Josh, Bonnie Joe, and Milan for helping us to just keep this in the open. By keeping it in the open, we hopefully are presenting opportunities for democracy to work. And again, taking a stand and having our voices heard, and at least making sure that we're doing everything that we can do to try and protect our industry and actually protect our children and our patients and consumers as well. So my thanks so much to you guys. And then thank you to everyone that joined the call. The chat conversation was really amazing. I think we forget how much political capital we can have if we're organized and we support each other. So thanks for taking time to be on this conversation and to hear what we're working on and how we've been impacted.
Well, thank you, Hunter. You've been fabulous.
It's always a treat to work with you, Hunter. And I know that there's been a lot of changes since you were last on the podcast. You left Element 6 and started your own policy shop and advocacy organization, Ag Policy Solutions. I dropped the website in the chat for those of you who are interested. Hunter has a storied history in hemp and has been a valued colleague of mine for several years. She was one of the first people I met in the hemp industry, actually at an APA event on CBD in Denver, where we were both speakers. And so please do check out Hunter's website. She's doing some great work in advocacy and policy. We serve together on the Government Affairs Committee of the National Industrial Hemp Council. And Hunter and Bonnie Joe and I also serve together on the board of the Association of Western Hemp Professionals. So we are thrilled to have you all here and listening to us. And it is my hope that later this spring, once the legislative sessions slow down, we can have time to have a little bit of a hot wash and have some strategic conversations about where we need to go in hemp and CBD advocacy. But in the interim, I really appreciate everyone tuning in, and I really appreciate everyone reaching out to legislators and encouraging others to reach out to legislators so that we can save the hemp industry and get it on the right trajectory for moving forward. So thanks, everybody, for being here. Twee, Alan. It was great to meet you. Please keep us in the loop. Hunter, keep me looped in via email, and we will work to help advance the interests of the hemp industry together. So thanks, everybody, for joining Hemp Rising, and have a great rest of your day.
All right. Thanks, everybody. I got around. I appreciate everyone. Thanks for coming.
Thanks so much, everyone.